Thank you all for coming at short notice, and my apologies for not being able to be here yesterday. So how many of you here are aware of what we've been doing with Serval already? Okay, some of you are not so much. Okay, so the short of what we're trying to do is to get mobile phones to communicate directly with one another without dependence on cellular infrastructure for disaster zones. You know, there's a whole variety of use cases. I don't think we need to really go over what they would be for this kind of audience. Yeah, that's right. Hmm. And I guess we wanted to make something which would be useful, secure, simple, that people would just be able to actually just get on and actually use. Because, I mean, there's been plenty of stuff that's been done on mesh networking in the past, less with mobile than with fixed. And when we started looking at it, it was just immediately obvious to us that the regular approach of having to, you know, mess around with IP address allocations and all of this kind of stuff really gets in the way of people being able to use it. And then you kind of go, look, like, how the heck do we secure this? How do we know that we're talking to the person we think we're talking to? And so we set about building, and my apologies, my laptop just doesn't want to talk to the projector. But if you go to developer.servalproject.org/wiki, you will find our tech roadmap that covers a whole pile of the stuff that I'm going to try and run through a little bit here. And so we decided from the outset to make the mesh operators an overlay mesh. So it doesn't really care whether you've got IPv4, IPv6, or no IP at all underneath. So that we could use public keys directly as network addresses. So we simplify that whole network address to key mapping kind of thing. And so if I know your network address, I actually know your public key, I can send you encrypted communications. And so as a result, without having to go to any special effort, whenever you make a phone call or send a text message on the Serval mesh, it is end-to-end encrypted. All you have to do is make sure that the key belongs to the right person at the other end. And we have kind of some half-finished stuff to make that a little easier to do from the get-go as well, in terms of having a bit like with GPG does, where you can have the fingerprint word list for keys. And so you can read those to each other over the phone call. And so an attacker would need to be able to resynthesize your voice in real time, which will probably be an issue in 3 or 4 or 5 years' time. But for the moment, it's probably actually still okay. And it can at least be used as a way to get some confidence in the person that you're talking to. So practically, we have voice calls working. We have text messaging. Oh, thank you. And we also have just general file sharing, which typically is unencrypted. It's kind of the, I'm just going to push something out onto the mesh. It ends up on everyone's device, and it's not immediately obvious who's actually put it there. So in terms of some of this, you know, the combination of needing security and anonymity that has been talked about in some of the previous talks, as I understand, are some things that we've kind of been thinking about. And also having plausible deniability in the way that the key system works. So you can have more than one key on a device. Different pins could potentially unlock different identities and could actually be set up so that if you put in a duress pin, it unlocks one of the benign identities and actually wipes permanently the keys that you need to undo the other. And your text messages and everything else is stored encrypted in bundles that actually end up on a whole pile of phones anyway. So it actually would be very difficult if you were able to enter the duress pin in before someone cloned the memory of the SD card of your phone with the keyring on it. They basically have no way to prove after the fact that you actually were the author of any material or the owner of any particular key. I'm not saying that system is perfect yet, but it's something that we've been thinking about because we know that in a variety of use cases and even quite uncontroversial use cases, these can actually be quite important functions for people. So we had a trial in Nigeria, and again, if you look on the wiki under the reports and presentations, you'll find that there's a trial in Nigeria in late 2010, early 2011, I think that's when it was anyway, with Internews and a couple of other groups, which is really kind of cool. There was this communities on the waterfront in Nigeria. Who were being threatened with eviction by the government because they wanted to build new fancy stuff for people with more money, basically. And so they did a trial with a very early version of the Serval mesh. It didn't have the encryption stuff in there, and it was only using Wi-Fi on the phones. But what was actually really cool was at the end of that, the report basically came out and said quite strongly that people communicated more, including with Amnesty International and the others that they were trying to communicate with, and spent less money in the process, which was a really cool kind of vindication, I guess, of what we were doing. And that was with a really early version. You need more range than what Wi-Fi can offer, and you need to bake the security in so that it's trustable. And the security, as we've already talked about a little bit, we have worked on quite substantially, and I think we have a pretty happy solution. And the distance is what we've been working more on recently. By the way, am I talking too fast for anyone? No? Cool? Okay. Yes, a question. Sorry? Somewhere on the waterfront. The report probably says what communities, if that is public information. I can't remember. I didn't go there, so we were just kind of doing the tech from our end for them. Which is actually kind of cool because we weren't there at all. So these people, with some training support, worked out how to use it and then actually were using it in the slums that they were living in. So more recently, what we've been working on is fixing the range problem. Everyone's best friend who does wireless hardware hacking, the TP-Link MR3020, flashed with our own software at a USB memory stick because the ServerD binary doesn't fit in 4 mega flash, and the Rhizome store and forward stuff just totally in that. Into that we've added an RFD900 UHF radio. I'll just open one of these up. Should be able to pry it near the top there. So basically, we've added a UHF radio into the router, and so that UHF radio we will typically have. Actually, pass it around so everyone can have a squeeze at what's in there. So we're using the serial port to talk to the packet radio. The packet radio does 128 kbit raw at the moment. That might get tweaked, but the cool thing is with Rhizome, with the store and forward protocol that we've made, that's totally fine because we just synchronize things opportunistically when we need to. Pardon me. Sorry? Rhizome, which is our own... because we've done this whole crazy overlay thing, everything actually we've had to effectively implement ourselves. But one of the nice things is we didn't have to make Linux know that radio is actually a network interface. Like, it doesn't show up in ifconfig or anything. It's just you tell ServerD, hey, real port, do Rhizome stuff over it, because we wanted it all to work without needing root on the phones, and to do that everything had to be an overlay anyway, and so it kind of set the scene for making it really easy to do this kind of thing. Or if you didn't want that radio, I mean, because that radio you can't use here in Europe because it's using 915 to 928 megahertz, which is GSM spectrum here. Yeah, that's right. It's not so much ISM band here. But yeah, so in Australia, the US, Israel has some of it. Like, there's this whole weird list of countries that have various pieces of this 26 megahertz band. And I think particularly for a lot of the use cases of disaster and the like, it becomes much more feasible to use these things in more places as well. What was I going to say next? Okay, so we started working on those to address the range issue. They typically get 10 times the urban range of Wi-Fi. So Wi-Fi, the rule of thumb we use is it goes through about one substantial wall. You can typically see your neighbours. With this, I can put one inside, like on a bench inside the house, and I can walk right the entire way around our block, which is like it's 190 metres across the diagonal to the far side, and still get signal on the other side. If I put it on the top of the chimney of my house, we get more like 500, 600, 700, 800, 900 metres through the urban area. And of course, if you had it on a rooftop of someone else's house, then suddenly, we've had 3 kilometres without trouble. And the radios are normally used in model aircraft. And in that situation, they've had up to 80 kilometres. If you don't have any background interference and if you can put one of them on an airplane. Of course, once they're meshing, actually putting them on an airplane is a really cool idea for a whole pile of things. Yes, or a balloon, which we've done. It was very nice to see that Google were finally getting the idea of balloon lofting these things. Because back at LinuxConf 2011 in Brisbane, just after Brisbane had been underwater, we actually set up a balloon holding a phone running the servo mesh, and kind of show that whole kind of balloon relay thing. And we'll be doing that again, if anyone happens to be in Australia, later this month on the 15th and 17th of this month. If you just happen to be in the Australian Outback, you're more than welcome to come along, and we'll do it again. And on the steam train as well. You can talk to me about the fun way that that's happening after. So going back to, you know, the Nigeria trial identified, it was the security in the range. We'd already dealt with security. These things can really help us to attack the range issue in a really meaningful way. So Wi-Fi, as we say, you know, only kind of goes one house. So you need everyone in an area to be on the mesh to make the mesh. With these, suddenly you have a radius of 5 or 10 or 15 houses. You only need like 1% of people in an area to be on the mesh to actually participate. And of course, then the Wi-Fi will cover there. It's this kind of way that people can try it out before they even get hold of one of those things to build it up. Sorry, yes.
Can these things work standalone, or do they need to be connected to a
pod? They can work standalone. So basically what it is you're, to get the full functionality out of your Android phone, you need it to connect to one of those. Otherwise, you'd need to root your phone, which is kind of fine for a lot of us, but, you know, for our grandmothers and... Yes, so it's Wi-Fi from the phone to that, and then that will do Wi-Fi, ad hoc Wi-Fi from that to others of those, and it will do the UHF packet radio if they're not in Wi-Fi range of each other. So it will use the link with the best bandwidth and best performance in the situation. So this being able to get, you know, effective wireless meshing without having to mount stuff on the outside of your house, without having to think about address allocation or a whole pile of other stuff, literally just download the app, put it on your phone, have one or more of these in the area and have it just work, I think will be really empowering and disruptive to the way that things have been done in the past. And I think we'll get mesh telephony to actually, you know, we're not saying that there aren't other challenges with it, but I think it really will address some of the major outstanding difficulties that are faced, which is why we've launched an Indiegogo campaign to try and finish the development of these things off, initially for the ISM band, but we'd also love to do it for some of the European bands that are available. So whether it's the 433 band or the 868, my suspicion is that the 433 is probably a better one, with a little bit more bandwidth and actually in better propagation again than what we're doing there at 900 meg. And so if people are able to spread the word about the campaign, that would be fantastic. If anyone wants to, you know, to help us with the software, that's a fantastic way for us to not need as much cash to pay developers to do work. Or if anyone wants to make applications that use it, it would be fab as well. Yes. Okay, yeah. So you need to download the Sevelmesh app, which will then talk to it and do its kind of stuff. But what the mesh extender units themselves will actually offer the app for download as well, because they run a web server on them as well. So if you don't have the app on your phone already, you'll be able to very easily download it, install it. And then we actually already have over the mesh cryptographically signed software updates, which is kind of one of the nice things. Because of the whole security thing, it actually turned out to be essentially trivial for us to implement that. Tablets? Yeah, they should be able to. And in fact, the core serval program will run quite happily on Linux, because we develop it on Linux anyway, and then basically build it, you know, we compile it for those things as well. So if someone wanted to make a front end for Linux, that would be fantastic as well. Or even do it in Java and just make a cross-platform one. Because again, the cool thing is it doesn't need root access. It doesn't need to mess with routing tables in the operating system. All of that is abstracted out into user land. In fact, if someone wanted a really fun project, using there's a LLVM to JavaScript compiler, and I think there's a couple of them, it would be totally cool to actually compile Servald to run in a browser, so it would be running locally on a machine, irrespective of the platform, and then basically you could just go to a web page to actually participate in the mesh, which would be kind of interesting and funky. And of course, it would be a way to get rid of the walled garden problem, for example, with people that are using iPhones and the like, which is another reason why we've gone overlay as well, because it's the only way we'd have a fighting chance at all of getting this on the Apple App Store. But I suspect that we may need to resort to doing the JavaScript browser client to get around the problem of Steve's ghost and just that whole kind of approach. Yes. So what can they do? So it's designed so that if you don't have any internet connection at all, you have local connectivity. So our goal really is all the things that you do with a smartphone now when you're connected to the net with the whole world, that when you're cut off from the world, you can do with everyone locally. And if someone connects it to the world, that can leak back and forth. So yes, we basically have VoIP, although on the mesh itself, it turns out that SIP and RTP is not very good on a wireless ad hoc mesh with mobile devices. Because the packet loss is really deadly and the routing protocols take forever to reconverge. And so we actually have our own mesh voice protocol, which we call VoMP, Voice Over Mesh Protocol, very creatively named. And it does, because when we did the first trials of the Seville project in the Outback back in 2010, we had this kind of bizarre problem where if the phones were right next to each other, we could ring and the other one would ring like within a couple of seconds. And we're like, okay, that's cool. You'd stand 30 meters away and suddenly it wouldn't, because if the wrong SIP packet got lost at the wrong time, the retry timeout was like 30 or 60 seconds. It was just really designed for low packet loss environments. And RTP, of course, doesn't have any sense of retransmission because it goes, well, by the time you ask for it, it's too late to resend it. But what we do instead is we try to preemptively retransmit audio over lossy links and do some funky per hop stuff. Yes. No. So there's a number of things. So one is that SIP, the protocol for SIP is not really thinking about packet loss in a really healthy kind of way. That's part of it. No. Why don't we want to use SIP? Oh, no. We used to use it. Sorry. So the first version of the Serval mesh, we compiled all of Asterisk and a modified version of SipDroid and some other glue and had that running on the original Google G1 developer phones. It was a very interesting exercise compiling Asterisk for those phones. It uses loadable modules and there's no standard Linux linker on Android. It was fascinating. But we knew we wanted to get rid of that. And of course, one of the big issues is that SIP and RTP doesn't have good crypto. And in particular, it's not capable of distributed crypto. So is it ZRTP, the encrypted one? It's all based on certificate hierarchies. So you can't just have an end-to-end encrypted call in a disconnected kind of way. So, or at least...
I think you could use it.
Yeah. So anyway, we've done what we've done and it's working surprisingly well. Also, we're much lower bandwidth on the call setup. And so on a good day, SIP was like 3 seconds to actually ring. Now it's imperceptible. It's like 100 or 200 milliseconds. We can actually basically have the other phone ringing just because we've gone for a much lighter things. I mean, we don't have three-way calling. We don't have a whole pile of kind of crazy stuff that SIP can do if you need a whole PABX, but we have what people typically need and in a nice way that works with the end-to-end encryption by default. You actually need to tell it if you don't want encryption. If you want to send a broadcast packet on the mesh using our APIs, you actually have to mark it and say, no, don't encrypt. Otherwise, it'll actually get the packet will refuse to be accepted because it will say, hey, it's a broadcast packet. They can't be encrypted. You need to tell me you want it to be unencrypted to go out. So the Indiegogo campaign, the short link for that is igg.me/@speakfreely. And again, the more we can spread the word out with that would be really fantastic. And if people are interested in being part of the development process, that would be totally cool as well. So it's all GPL code and everything as well. So, Serval project. Yeah. So SERVAL project.org. Yeah. So we're looking at the Olimex boards, and we may still revisit them. The reason we've ended up making these because we realized that the 3020s, the serial port, was actually was easy to get to. The voltages were all right. I think these consume less. And so then it's just a question of, can we make our code run in 32 meg of RAM on a 400 megahertz MIPS processor? And the answer actually turns out to be yes. There are a few caveats. The signature verification is a bit slow on them. It's 10 to 20 milliseconds. So they tend to perform fine. Like, you can have an encrypted voice call because that's not actually signed. It's auth-crypted, which is, even on those, is really fast. So it's about 2% of CPU on a 500 megahertz, really cheap and nasty, like $30 Android phone. It'll use like 2% of the CPU for the encryption. But if you do a ping over the mesh with signed packets, that can like eat 100 milliseconds ago on those. Although it is better now, it's down around 10 to 15 with the latest version of NACL that we've got. Oh, sorry, yes?
I'm surprised you're not doing authenticated encryption on the actual call data. Is that not a problem?
Yeah, no, we are. So there's a subtle thing. So we don't have to do public key verification and signatures. Instead, because it's an encrypted party to... Sorry, I know your public key. You know my public key. We know each of our private keys. So we can do Diffie-Hellman key exchange, and we can use a hash checksum of the message and encrypt all of that using the shared session key that we can generate deterministically without having to do a key exchange. So it is end-to-end encrypted and it is authenticated. It's just using a different cryptographic primitive that is much, much, much more efficient. So it's only if you want to send a packet out that everyone can verify that you produced is when we incur this penalty. Sorry, you had another question as well.
If you're working without these routers,
so we're working with
without these nodes.
Yes.
What value do you still have then? Can you just from phone to phone? If I install it and someone else installs it.
So if you have non-rooted phones, then basically it will cycle the phones between access point mode and client mode, and so the data will kind of opportunistically move across in a second class kind of way, but it still can.
Can you then still do proper phone calling via the mesh?
But only, of course, over the hops of the link that are actually up at that point in time.
Yeah.
And so we're going to add voicemail precisely as a nice kind of graceful fallback for that. And so this is sort of some of the stuff that we'd love to work on.
I've been talking yesterday with the people from Fairphone Project.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, like, this would be beautiful to combine. You know the Fairphone project?
I know a little about them. Yeah. So, yeah, it would be totally cool.
So, at the moment, this idea came up at me, like, why don't you guys, I told them, implement a walkie-talkie functionality into the Fairphone so that you can just, like, in the interface, you have a button that says, like, a walkie-talkie.
Yep.
And then you can use something like a servo mesh network. Or even without the mesh, just point-to-point links to just see, like, okay, these people are around you. Oh, this is a friend of mine. I want to call this person that is just within 100 meters from me because I really miss it here on the festival terrain.
Yeah.
I want to call people, but I don't want to use GSM, some telco, to call somebody who might be just around here.
Exactly. And it's not just events like this. It turns out that, and I wish I could remember where I read the stat, but something like 80% of mobile phone calls are less than 4 kilometers. And with mesh extended, suddenly 4 kilometers is totally, totally doable. So we're not going to displace the carriers. In a lot of audiences, I have to be very careful to say that. I think, here with a reasonably technical audience, I think it's easy enough to understand, for global connectivity, it's going to be pretty hard to outdo cellular infrastructure. They might find themselves a little bit more commoditized and a little bit less able to be monopolistic varmints, but it's not going to completely replace, but it could certainly, I think, for a lot of people in a lot of situations, it can give them a really nice option to communicate in a way that they want to, that doesn't have to go through centralized infrastructure that they may decide to not trust or not want to afford for a variety of reasons.
Are you selling or planning to sell the units?
We are planning to sell them, yes. But bear in mind, again, for the European market at the moment, the prototypes we have here would actually be totally illegal to turn on, because you'll have your local cell carriers will get really snotty about it, and they do have the means. If they like, if it was a persistent use, they'd be able to work out where you were. And
do you have any idea of the estimated cost?
So at the moment with these prototypes, so the MR3020 we can get for like about $30 US for the base unit, and then to add the radio in, so we can get those radios in small quantities for like $70. This is Australian dollars. So if we said like 100 Australian dollars, roughly dollars, so what's that, 60 euro, something like that. And there are cheaper radio options that just, they don't perform as well. Those ones are just like, they're totally sweet. They're like a good 8 or 10 dB better link margin for the same transmit power as anything else that we've found.
So 60 total?
Sorry, 60.
Total euros? Or
like, you know, if we could mass produce them in some reasonable quantity, then 60 euro would be... but that, we really still would need to be a single PCB, and we'd have to get like thousands of them made to hit that price point. In the meantime, if you wanted to make one yourself, it would cost you, as I say, you know, like $70. So if you were to buy the radios in ones and twos, like $200 Australian gets you a pair of radios and the antennas, and then another $60 or $70 will get you a pair of the 3020s, and then it would just be a case of you know drilling the holes and doing the hacking and a few bucks for the little USB memory sticks. We're just using the nice little low profile one, so it doesn't stick out too far, and then. We're really happy actually about finding these. These are like $17.50 for a 36 watt hour rechargeable battery, which will run a mesh extender for like 18 hours. And the really cool gimmick feature, you press the button and it tells you what percentage you got left on the battery. Like, it's just like someone's been thinking of people using high power mesh stuff. The only downside is it can't charge and run it at the same time. This isn't, you plug in the power to charge it, it turns the power out off. But that would be pretty easy to work around, I think. So, you know, at the moment, like, you know, if you wanted to make a pair, 100 euros a piece would be quite feasible, I think. And if a bunch of people wanted to, we can get the, as I say, the radios at wholesale price at like $70, well, actually at $62 plus tax. So if you were getting them here, you wouldn't be paying the Aussie tax. So that would be possible to do them for like $100.
Maybe on the next Ohm-like conference, we just put a few of these antennas around. Because now we're using these DECT phones. It's already also really nice. But maybe this would be a really good experiment for festivals and stuff.
Yeah, and we'd love to do that. Realistically, I think we feel that we need to do more work on the software to make it ready for that. But we would love a bunch of people who, you know, like, even just with a specific goal of saying, hey, let's get the next, you know, CCC camp or Ohm to be independent of... you know, centrally produced communications. We'd love to work with a team to do that.
Could you create an interface with Asterisk and interface with all the other systems?
There already is.
There already is.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, so you can have a mesh and you can tie it into the outside world. So, or in fact, and I wish I could get it up on the screen. So if you are in a situation where you have a bunch of people who need to use a single, like say if you get a burner sim, and you want a bunch of people to be able to communicate, and maybe you've got some of the things like the MC catcher kind of things trying to stop these people from communicating with the outside world. So you put a new SIM card in and maybe use a different phone each time. So you get two phones, you acoustically couple them through the headphone jack by basically duct taping the microphone to the earpiece of a headset and vice versa. Incredibly, incredibly ugly. And if you look at the graphic equalization that it actually yields, it is horrific. But it actually works, and we had a student work on it last semester putting it together, and we even have DTMF parsing working over the acoustically coupled link, so you can dial into the mesh and then it will prompt you with an IVR that's running on the phone to say, okay, what mesh number do you want to connect to, and then it will connect the call through, and vice versa going out on the civil mesh, you just dial the normal number, and on the connection options it will actually show you there's a GSM gateway here. There may even be more than one of them, and you can just choose one and have it try and connect the call through. And so, of course, it's really good for if you just want to have a people outside of communication range that want to be able to call 112 or 911 or 000 or 999 or whatever, 111, whatever it happens to be in your particular country for emergency services.
I think the applications are boundless. Community level, company, for example, the idea of putting sensor information and distributing.
Yeah.
You could self-document everything, put the automatically in a wiki. Everybody that it's.
Yeah, and we're doing our best to do that. And really, our limiting factor at the moment is the number of hands available to help in the work. Because we have a couple of contributors from outside of our core group in Adelaide, but it's still mostly a bunch of us sitting in a uni lab in Adelaide, and you know, trying to find ways to keep ourselves paid. So.
Can you specify maybe like the things you need, like on what projects and what
sure. things? So if you go to the developer.servalproject.org/wiki and go to the tech roadmap, you'll find there's a whole pile of stuff of features that we're working on, features that we want to work on. There's also an issue tracker with various bugs and stuff. We'd love to work with people that want to do stuff. But I think, for example, getting a Linux desktop client for the mesh would be a really, really awesome thing to do. And just, you know, sitting down with a bunch of people to say, hey, let's work through the use case of trying to make it work for a festival-like setting with, you know, a dozen of these things in an area and trying it out and seeing how it performs and going, hey, okay, let's, you know, file bugs on these things that break and make it work. I think this, our feeling is that it's kind of at the point where it's time to start getting it out of the lab and more into actual use, and finding the things that are broken with it and then working with the community to fix those things. And because at the end of the day, I want the development of Serval to actually be distributed. Because at the moment, there is actually a significant vulnerability in that, you know, 90-something percent of the development effort is in one lab in one jurisdiction that has an extradition treaty with various other countries. I'm a naturally paranoid person, and I think about these things. And so I would love for there to be nodes of Serval development activity in countries that don't have mutual extradition treaties with Australia, because that's actually redundancy. And one of the things we want to do for the over-the-air updates over the mesh is have a quorum signing system, so that even if Serval, you know, like if our group was subverted through whatever reason, that in fact that wouldn't be enough to do like the LimeWire network self-destruct that they did, because our key alone wouldn't be enough. You would need to get, you know, say 6 out of 8 keys that would be held. And so maybe, you know, Access Now have a key, maybe New America Foundation have a key, maybe Enelnet have a key, you know, the whole variety of organizations that could have them. And then basically they go, okay, here's an update to the source. Let's look at the diffs. Okay, there's no sneaky back doors in there. Rebuild the binary. And actually making provably identical binaries on Android is kind of hard, because there's all these weird date stamps that end up in all the class files. But getting to that point of saying, hey, okay, we know, yep, that this is the thing and we're happy to sign it, and then everyone sticks their signature on the update, and once it's hit the magic number, then it starts getting spread and update on everyone's device, would be really cool.
Cool, sounds very good. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Another early adopter community would be the radio amateurs.
Yeah.
Which, do you have any feedback from there?
Some. So we know a number of radio amateurs who are also, like in Adelaide, there's a big overlap of the amateurs and the Linux community and various other things. So the big difficulty actually with for using amateur radio, because they've got some lovely spectrum that would be totally sweet for doing this, and it's globally allocated, but there's this really annoying rule in there which says no encrypted data. So would be a little bit counterproductive for what we're trying to do in some ways, which isn't to say that it wouldn't be possible. Like we could do the whole Rhizome synchronizing publicly, you know, like news and all of those sorts of things. But yeah, not being able to have secure communications means that it won't meet a number of use cases.
Can I thank you for an excellent talk and a marvelous project?
Thank you
very much.